Welcome to the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper, and with me, the senior blogger for CBSSports.com, Matt Moore.
You gotta call me that.
Oh, I love giving you a title.
You gotta quit calling me that.
And I didn't even give it to you.
Yeah, this is not gonna be. That's not gonna go over well.
What's great is for a while, my lady friend was on the House of Punte football podcast, and right after Josh Zirkle was hired by Bleacher Report, they kept referring to him as lead NFL blogger or lead NFL writer for Bleacher Report, and it drove him nuts. So I kind of feel like I'm carrying on the tradition.
It's a tradition, unlike any other.
Right? It's a tradition in this living room every time someone podcasts. Got some big news. Dirk had surgery.
Yeah, kind of random. It was funny because I just got done writing up yesterday I meant to get the Cuban post and didn't get around to it. And it was Mark Cuban saying, you know, he's going to be fine. We have a crack training staff. He's going to be totally okay. And then, like, this morning, like, after I posted that, Nowitzki out 6 weeks with surgery. What
I found interesting, you just tweeted this, was, like, none of that leaked at all. Like, that is a tightly run ship.
Yeah, he talked about that at Sloan, too, about how, like, they're really proud of the fact that their trades, like, there's never any noise about their trades. Like, they just kind of, like, Kidd was the exception to that rule. Like, most of their stuff just doesn't get leaked. They have a really good, and it's funny because he talked about it, he was like, it's less about our end, and it's more about we control who we talk to about stuff. So, it was impressive that didn't come out. Like, that stuff always comes out. I expected somebody to grab, you know, sources, Nowitzki to have, you know, arthroscopic surgery. So, I mean, it's arthroscopic. These guys have, you know, it happens all the time. It's not a big deal, but, you know, and the idea is like, oh, it could take up to 6 weeks. Doesn't mean it's going to take 6 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, this is not the same thing, but, like, I've had arthroscopic knee surgery before, and I was out a couple of weeks before I could return to, like, high school football practice. Obviously, a little bit higher level of NBA games, but it really can be a thing where, in 3 to 4 weeks, he's back practicing again, and he's virtually fine.
Yeah, except my problem with that is, like, you know, conditioning was a problem for him last year.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's always my thing with these injuries. Everybody's like, oh, but he could be back within this amount of time. I'm like, man, you know, it takes them a week and a half. That's why there's always a drag when people are like, but he was supposed to be cleared by now. And it's like, well, he's fine from the injury, but he's going to get back into game shape. And that's how it gets way harder the older you get. And so, you know, I'm still looking at kind of like 6 weeks. I looked at the schedule. If he's out 6 weeks exactly, that puts him back at the December 3rd. There's a home game against a lottery team. I forget who, but it's a home game. You know, he'd end up mixing 16 games in that scenario, and 10 of them are against likely playoff teams.
And this is like a mixed emotions for me because, one, I hate it. I don't even care if it's the Timberwolves' biggest rival. I hate it when guys get hurt. Especially star players. Like, I like the NBA so much. I want everyone to be healthy and see what happens. And it bothers me when people are like, oh, good, this guy on an opposing team got hurt. Like, that makes us better. But at the same time, with Love going down, I'm like, well, that does make the Love injury seem a little bit easier because, you know, Dallas is probably one of those teams fighting for the playoffs with the Timberwolves. I mean, they're a bit better, but now it's kind of equal playing ground.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big winner here again is the Warriors. Like, the Warriors.
Yeah,
the Warriors have everything going their way except for the fact that Andrew Bogut is seeing a specialist for his ankle again. Like, like, other than that, they're fine.
And that's kind of the ironic thing is the team that has the biggest problem or one of the biggest problems staying healthy is being helped right now by their opponents. Stars going down.
Yeah, and I mean, I think part of it also is just the fact that, like, you know, it also opens the door for the Jazz, I think, too.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I have to look at the Jazz's schedule, but if the Jazz can fatten up early, that's going to give them, like, that may be their best chance is to kind of fatten up and kind of, you know, get themselves a little bit of a break to be able to push through. The Mavericks do play Minnesota in Dallas, so the Wolves get the Mavs without Dirk, and that's going to be a really interesting kind of mix of guys, Elton Brand versus, who's the backup? I guess Dante Cunningham.
Yeah, well, the backup, I assume, will be Derek Williams.
Yeah, Derek Williams, and then, that's, and obviously, barn burner in that instance. And they play Golden State as well. So they play Golden State and they play Utah. So both of those teams are going to be able to at least have a chance to get ahead. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to win because, you know, we talked about it yesterday. Like, there's a lot of times these random games just occur. Like, you just lose for random reasons. Like, O.J. Mayo, you know, oh, he had one of those nights where he scores 30, you know, every, you know, 6 months or so. Like, that could, you know, theoretically happen. They could end up losing or just have a bad night. But in general, you know, this looks like it's at least going to have an impact on the early thing. The other thing that's actually kind of interesting about this, and we didn't talk about this yesterday, but I just thought of it. You know who unintentionally wins a lot here, even though they don't necessarily play either of those teams? Denver. Because Denver has 10 of their first 17, I think, on the road.
For sure.
And it's actually, it was more than, it's like 20 of their first 27 or something ridiculous like that, where they have so many road games. That's been one of the things I've been talking about with Denver is I'm like, look, this team could start off really bad because of the amount of road games they get. But if they're still, you know, if they're still hanging in the, if they're still got, if they're above 500 and still, they could still be in a really good position in the Western Conference to allow them. And when they get to January, I mean, they're home for almost all of January and February, so that could really help them out.
And that's huge too for like kind of the dog days of the season. If they have a lot of home games, it's really the schedule kind of helping them through a time where guys maybe get a little tired, maybe hit the wall. Rookies hit the, you know, the proverbial rookie wall. That could be huge. And they play Minnesota and Dallas, I believe, quite a bit in the first couple months. I know they played the T-Wolves at least twice.
Yeah, so I mean, it's going to be that's gonna, the Western Conference playoff race outside of the top three is really going to be interesting to see how it shapes out. And we've talked a lot about, you know, we'll do the West Division previews next week because, I mean, there's just a number of things where it's like, man, there's a lot of ways that this thing could go with, I don't know how good the Grizzlies are going to be. I feel like the Grizzlies could be as good as they were last year, but take a step back in the standings. I feel like the Clippers could be better than they were last year and yet take a step back in the standings, or they could be, you know, better in the standings but worse overall. I feel like there's a lot of ways that the Western Conference could shake out, and these injuries are starting to, and those injuries are going to have an impact on it too.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll talk about more of this next week, but looking at the Clippers, like, I was trying to figure out, I wrote something yesterday, I was trying to figure out, are they contenders now, looking at who they brought in, and it's like, wow, they can't really defend inside. I mean, they're, you know, DeAndre Jordan's a decent defensive center who can be a shot-blocking threat, and maybe he improves, and then you know, everybody wants Blake Griffin to improve his defense to be less of a saloon door, but you look and it's like, well, they don't really have the depth in there. They brought in Ryan Hollins, they brought in Lamar Odom, they brought in Roni Turiaf, who Jeremy Evans destroyed. And then I looked at the wing, and it's like, all right, they brought in Grant Hill if he's healthy. They brought in Matt Barnes. Like, those are guys that can defend on the wing, and maybe that's how you improve the defense, is you just stop guys from driving inside.
Yeah, that's got to be, you know, kind of the improvement. And that's actually kind of similar to what the Nuggets and a few other teams actually did, that they got better on the wing to try and cut down on those, on that perimeter penetration, even if you don't necessarily have the best, you know, if you don't have, like, Tyson Chandler inside. DeAndre Jordan, I don't know if he still is, but the other night he's actually leading the preseason in field goal percentage. So, you know, that's a good sign.
Oh, yeah. So he'll be fine. They are contenders now.
Yeah, they are. Exactly. They are contenders now. You know, actually, one more thing with that, though, the depth. You know, their best position of depth may actually be point guard. That's,
yeah,
you know, crazy to think that they could lose Chris Paul and be okay. They would obviously take a huge step backwards, but, you know, Bledsoe is so good and showing so much now that he's healthy. Like, that's, yeah, that's a big impact for them. It's really crazy that they've got Bledsoe, who's so good. Them and, you know, them and OKC both, where it's like, man, your backup point guards are really good. And we're going to talk more about that next week on the blog.
And that, you know, I wonder, like, could they run a Denver Nuggets type of thing where can you play Eric Bledsoe at the two? I mean, it all comes down to him knocking down outside shots. But God, if they could play those two together for a 4 or 5 minute stretch, you could really do some damage in that amount of time.
They could, but they won't, because Vanya Negro is not going to...
What? Is he still the coach?
He's not going to not play Caron Butler / Chauncey Billups / Jamal Crawford. Like, that's just not going to happen.
Oh, they really should give Chauncey Billups the old Yeller treatment. I mean, I'm not condoning murder on the podcast. I'm just saying, like, you've got to put him out of his playing misery somehow.
He, I was so sad when he got injured last year, because my favorite running gag... during the season was that Phillips was mad because they picked him up on the amnesty wire even though he didn't want them to. He was deliberately sabotaging them. That was my favorite running storyline. Was just tweeting, listen all y'all, this is sabotage. Every single time he would take a terrible shot and miss.
Which was a lot.
A lot. So.
Alright, well, let's get into this Southeast Division preview. Maybe the hottest contested division out there.
The nail, I tell you.
For the bottom of the division. That's really where the fight's going to be with Charlotte and Orlando. And I'm assuming Washington gets better because of the veterans they brought in, a full year with Nene.
A full year with Nene.
Well, yeah, for whatever that means for him. So they shouldn't be in that race for the bottom of the cellar, but how do you see Orlando v. Charlotte working out?
So depressed right now. we just started. Just the mere mention. Yeah, I made a joke about this on Twitter. So I'm looking at different people I want to talk to this season and kind of be like, okay, who would be an interesting guy for a Q&A? And I was going through it, and I stopped on the – and we were watching a TV show last night, and I stopped on the Magic, and I was like, huh. I was like, I actually need to look at their roster. I was like, because I can't really think of anybody off the top of my head because, you know, they're coming to Denver. And I was like, well, I want to talk to Aflalo because everyone will be talking to him about the return to Denver, blah, 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 and Al Harrington, it'll be the same thing. You know, I was like, well, I could talk to Jameer, but I don't really know, like, how that's going to go over. I could talk to Glenn Davis, but, you know, I feel like that's not really going to go any sort of compelling places. I was like, well, who else is on the roster? And, like, you have to understand, like, for those listening, like, I could name you, like, a 10-man rotation for probably 28 teams without missing anybody just off the top of my head. I could not name most of the guys on the Magic roster. I had to look it up. I had to open up the roster. And then the worst part was I looked it up, and I got nauseous.
Oh, it's like bad egg salad. That's really, like, just a week old sitting in the sun egg salad. That's what their rotation reminds me of. Because the two best players on the team are Aaron Aflalo and, is it Gustavo Ayon? Is it Jameer Nelson? Is it Big Baby? Is it Hito? Like, who's the second best player on that team? Is it Vucevic?
You know, I think it's Jameer just because Jameer is so pounded on that I don't think that he's necessarily – I think he's a little bit underrated just because people think he's so terrible. Like, he can be – if he's healthy, he can be fine. He can be, you know, Jose Calderon a year ago quality starting point guard. Like, fine. He can be fine. Or 2 years ago because Calderon was really good last year. But like, he can be okay.
They really should put that on the media guide. Like, Jameer Nelson, he can be fine.
He can be fine. Gustavo Ayon has a lot of people excited, and he's got a lot of premise. But I mean, he's not going to go in, and he's not going to, you know, he's not going to bring you 16 points and 8 rebounds a game, you know. And one of their leading scorers, like the guy like blew up the other night, was Daquan Jones, who I had no idea. I have no recollection of this rookie out of Miami, Florida.
I fancy myself a pretty big basketball nerd. I get really deep into college basketball around the draft, just finding as much video as I can. I've never heard that name before.
I know, you know, and it's, you know, maybe Andrew Nicholson is a surprise, but I mean, this team is going to be, they're going to be bad. And they're, you know, I expect a Aflalo to honestly be shut down by March just because it's going to be like, they'll shut them down and tank out. And that'll be fine. I think for everybody, I think they should actually flip a Aflalo. I think that's what they should. I think they should wait till the deadline and then flip him to a team that really needs shooting. Play Denver, and they could, you know, I think that's their best chance. I think Jameer is the other one. I think they're really going to get that contract off. That was the most frustrating thing, I think, for me about their offseason is I was like, why would you possibly give Jameer that contract? Like, I don't even think Jameer's bad. Like, I think Jameer could be very helpful as a backup point guard somewhere. I think he could be, like, can you imagine Jameer Nelson on the Knicks? Like, that would be really good.
I can't imagine Jameer Nelson accepting a backup point guard role.
Neither can I, but I think that he's, you know, he made some comments when he got re-signed that were kind of indicative of him being a little bit more understanding of where he's at. I think he's been humbled by, you know, Dwight basically telling him he sucks for a year by talking about how much he wants to play with every other point guard in the league. you know, so I think that's it. But, I mean, they have some – the thing is, like, they have some things where I'm like, okay, well, you know, Vucevic, whichever, however you pronounce it, you know, I've seen him and I've really liked what I've seen out of him. I actually kind of like Ish Smith. J.J. Redick could have a bounce back year. I really like a lot of things. I wish they played J.J. on ball more. I liked what I've seen out of him. You can't really have him run like a fast break, but you can have him run like game manager, Kirk Heinrich type stuff, and it works out okay because of his shooting. If you play off of him, he can really hurt you. But yeah, they're gonna be terrible. And you know, the Bobcats. I started this. I was talking to Cardboard Gerald on Twitter, a Cavs or a Cats fan, one of like the four that exist. And I had this idea, and I wanted to run it by you. So I had this idea for, okay, the Cats are gonna be terrible, right? They're gonna be absolutely horrible, and there's nothing they can do about it.
Right.
They can play big. They can play big. They can play small. They can do whatever they want, and nothing is gonna change the fact that they're going to lose the game. We know this.
Right.
So, how do you make a bad team have a better chance at winning? You create absolute chaos offensively. That's how Don Nelson basically survived.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, who are their best players? I was like, well, it's probably three of their best players are Sessions, Kemba Walker, and Ben Gordon. I was like, but you can't play them all together. I was like, but what if you did? Like, play Sessions at point guard, Kemba Walker at Kemba Walker at shooting guard, Ben Gordon at small forward, with Michael K. Gilchrist at the four and Biombo at the five. And you call it the Itty Bitty Kitty Committee.
Wow. That's about 26 seconds that no one's ever going to get back. That was that bad egg salad feeling all over again. That just sounds horrible.
But that's the point, though, is like, if you're going to be terrible, be amusing. If you're going to be absolutely wretched, be a circus act. And you know, Sessions run the break with Walker and Gordon spotting up in transition. You get destroyed inside.
What do you mean spotting up? Who's going to pass to a spotted up Kemba Walker?
Ramon Sessions is. That's who.
Oh, my God. I mean, I like the idea of them making chaos through, like, pressing, through the whole Rick Pitino, hey, I could press in the NBA style, because I actually think they can win a decent number of games, like 22, 23 games in that style. It's just, they're going to get obliterated. They're going to have a pace of, like, 108 every game, and they're just going to be that annoying team that nobody wants to deal with because, my God, we have to deal with the press in the NBA. I mean, most teams can break that, but a whole game of that, of young guys just cycling in like it's some D3 basketball program experiment. I mean, that's really, I think, the way you create some kind of excitement and culture shock, and I think that's kind of what they're going to do with Mike Dunlap.
It'd be interesting to see it. Like, I think it's totally okay for them to get outside the box, because not only is it okay if they lose, they want to lose. So it's like,
yeah,
you know, I would just lose in a very interesting fashion. So yeah, I would play breakneck, I would press, and I would seriously run as small ball as possible. I'd just be like, we're just gonna run all the time. Every single second, we're gonna run and shoot. Who cares? Like, play like you do not care, because there is no point in this team caring this season. They need to get another high lottery pick so they can keep the pick and then get the kind of guy that they need. Hopefully Shabazz Muhammad or Cody Zeller. Like, that would be, you know, that would help them a lot. Washington, I think, is an interesting one.
Wait, real quick before we get to Washington, I just want to run off some names for you, because this has gotten me thinking about the Orlando Magic and how it's just a team of role players without a role right now, because they have nobody to compliment. The top five scorers for an Orlando Magic team 13 years ago: Daryl Armstrong, Ron Mercer, Chris Gatling, Tariq Abdul-Wahed, and John Amici. Top five. That's the top five scorers from the 99-2000 Orlando Magic. Do you remember what their record was?
I do not, but I can
41-41.
No.
That was the year, that was Doc Rivers' first coaching year. He came in, won Coach of the Year, just with an horrendous team. That was pre-T-Mac, pre-Grant Hill signing, and I part of me that keeps like worrying about like Orlando just ending up being good or decent is, what if Jacques Vaughn is Doc Rivers? What if that horrible team of role players is, I mean, because their current roster is better than that Orlando Magic team.
Yeah, it is by a lot.
And I mean, granted, it's a different league now, and we don't know what kind of coach Jacques Vaughn's going to be, but good God, like, what if?
I have no answer to that, because I can't imagine this team being... But
And isn't it the worst thing that could happen to them? Because they need they need to bottom out.
Yeah,
like, I would trade, like, I would flip a Aflalo, I would flip Redick, I would flip, well, no one's going to take Hedo, but, you know, like, I would try to flip Big Baby. I mean, I would just try to get as bad as possible, give Andrew Nicholson 40 minutes a game, Mo Harkless 38 minutes a game. I mean, that's what I would do.
You know what they should also do? Like, they should realistically do this. They should set the ceiling for what they think is, like, they should have an analyst run. How many wins do we have to get to this season to ensure that we have the top spot in the lottery?
Right.
Or top three pick. And the answer comes back like, well, you probably need to win about, you know, to be safe, you need to win about 22 games. Okay? So if you win 22 games, all right, when they hit 22...
Just forfeit.
Yes. Like, seriously, they should be like, okay, Jameer's on the bench. Like, all right, Jameer's hurt, Flawless hurt, Turkaloo's hurt, like, everybody. Like, trade as many guys as possible, and when you can't trade anybody anymore, shut them down completely and bring in D-League guys, file for the exception, and be done. Like, just go out there, run nine guys out there, and that's all I would do.
And what I thought you were going to say is apply for contraction. Just self-contraction.
So mean. So mean. You feel bad, too, because Orlando's been, like, a really good supportive
city. Yeah, they've been a great city. I mean, it feels like every...
They got over the Shaq thing and came back, and then it happened to them again.
Yeah, I mean, they went Shaq. All right, didn't work. They got Grant Hill and T-Mac. T-Mac turned out to be an awesome star for them. Grant Hill was injured. That runs its course. Then they get Dwight, become a finals team, have one of the best coaches in the league, and now they have to start over again. And now, I mean, who knows? They'll probably get the number one pick. They'll get Shabazz Muhammad. He'll be awesome for 7 years there, and then he'll leave.
And join the Lakers. And yeah, it's like, I mean, they're Charlie Brown, and the Lakers are Lucy. Like, that's what happens.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that makes, what does that make Daryl Morey? Because he got T-Mac. Is he Linus?
Yeah, that'd make him Linus.
Or who's the smelly kid?
Pigpen.
Pigpen. Because, well, I don't know. I could see more Pigpen than Linus. Not that Daryl Morey smells, but just there's a kind of dirty air to the Houston Rockets franchise that just never gets cleaned up.
Breathtaking analysis. Let's talk about the Wizards. I want to move on there.
Yeah.
You know, the idea, you know, I talked when they first made the trades, I hated it. And then I talked myself into it after listening to a lot of people kind of rationalized it. I started to kind of be like, okay, maybe this could work. And then now, you know, Wall's out, and Nene is already having problems in terms of his – he's got plantar fasciitis. That thing does not heal. It just doesn't heal. It's always painful.
Yeah.
And the only way for it to be okay is if you're not on it ever. So, I mean, I have some concerns because I'm looking at the leftovers of this roster, and I'm like, if they don't have those two pieces, this could get bad quick.
Yeah. The thing that worries – me is I love their depth inside with Nene and Emeka being backed up, because I think I love what I've seen from Kevin Serafin over the last, you know, 8-9 months. I think he's really developed and he could be a good backup. I love Trevor Booker off the bench. I think he's a fantastic like fourth big man to have. But the small forward position, I mean, Vesely can probably give you good minutes. Singleton is kind of a hothead, and I'm not sure you actually want him out there all that much, especially if he's on the floor with Jordan Crawford. And then Trevor Ariza, like, I just don't believe in – I refuse to believe Trevor Ariza really helps a team that much, even defensively. Like, I just – for he just – no one has given him a defined role since he was on the Lakers, and I think that's just kind of hurt his game into thinking he has to do more than he really should. And then you've got Martell Webster, and I love Martell. He's a great guy, but that he just cannot knock down shots anymore, and his back is going to be an issue at some point.
You know, and Vesely's one where I really liked him coming out of the draft. I looked up his video from Europe, and I was like, oh, this guy's got some post moves. Like, he's got a real scoring knack. Like, he could be – and now I'm just like, you know what? Until I see anything that resembles court awareness from him, I'm done. Like, I'm just not going to believe in this. Like, he's one where he's going to have to prove it to me. I like Chris Singleton a lot, actually. I think he's good. He got thrown to the wolves a lot last year where both Saunders and Whitman threw him at the best – offensive player a lot.
Yeah.
To get his feet wet and just and like you could tell he was just like hating his life. He was like, why are you doing why am I guarding Kobe? And yeah, he had to do it like every single game, and it you know, it toughened him up, I think, but it also causes a lot of problems in terms of just like, you know, you have to get his head out of that. I think he can be really good, but yeah, I mean, Ariza, it's one my concern, and I asked this a couple weeks ago on one of our podcasts, you know, is like, is Trevor Ariza gonna look at this and go like, oh, we need offense? Don't worry.
Yeah,
I'm here.
Yeah, that worries me. Like, hey, I've got playoff experience.
Yeah, it's like, and you know, that's like the last thing that they need. They really need for them. You know, they need to create through. Yeah.
And but that's actually where I like, because I like Nene with the ball in like the mid to high post, and he can face up and isolate, or he can back you down. And I like his options there, and I think he's pretty solid passer. And I still believe in John Wall. I think you give him good teammates, and he's going to be awesome. But the real key for them, at least creating, is allowing Bradley Beal to get loose a little bit. Like he positions himself really well on the side pick and roll. And he is great curling off screens, at least from what I've seen in the preseason. And everyone loves his shooting form. Although people keep saying Ray Allen shooting form, and we're not getting Ray Allen results, so there's a little bit to worry about there because the form does look so good. But that could just be something of it's a bad stretch, or he needs to make a minor adjustment that will allow him to just rain hellfire on everybody. But I, you know, him giving a non-Jordan Crawford-esque option to John Wall of, hey, I'll take the ball on this side of the floor and get something going, get a quality shot for myself or a teammate. He could be a huge boost for them if they give him some responsibility.
I like him a lot from the perspective of I like them conceptually if they're healthy, but my concern here is if Wall and Nene miss, you know, if they're out the first month of the season, you know, they worked so hard to change the culture.
Yeah.
But man, if they're down in the dumpster at the end of that first month, it could get the same kind of problems where a team starts believing it's not very good, could start creeping up, and it could have bad habits. And even though they got locker room guys that are pretty good, you know, they could have some real problems getting up out of that. And if that's the case, then it becomes, you know, okay, well, you're looking at like you're going to finish at best, you know, 35, 37 wins, and that's not going to be good enough to get in the playoffs. At what point do you go ahead and tank it out again? I mean, that's the thing, is like they really needed to be healthy going into the season to get a good start. And instead, you know, unless Beal and Trevor Booker kind of lead them, think about that, what I just said for a second. Unless Bradley Beal, a rookie, and Trevor Booker lead them, you know, they could be in some serious problems before they're even able to stabilize themselves. And that's, you know, they got to get Wall not only back, but in condition form, like we talked about, and able to function and have good chemistry with his teammates. They've got to get Nene back to where he's able to do all the things that he's capable of doing, as opposed to a lot of the stuff that he wasn't last year in Denver. I'm pretty worried that this could end up being another disaster for a Wizards organization that really can't afford another year like that.
Yeah, I wonder if, you know, once Wall comes back, he gets into shape, let's say he's fine by January, if they have a great run of 3 or 4 months to end the season, and I'm not even saying they have to make the playoffs, but just learning how to play with each other and learning how to win games, that might be enough for momentum into the next year.
Yeah, but then they got to make decisions based off of Ariza and Okafor on a lost year. Then they've got to make those decisions based off those contracts at that point. Like, you know, And that's the thing, is like I could see them get in a situation where it's like, oh, they look really promising, and then they make bad decisions with their cap based off of that limited sample size without really knowing what they're capable of or having the results behind it, and then they set themselves back further. Like they're in a, you know, Grunfeld's got a very precarious situation to deal with this year, depending on how it goes, unless everything goes magically, and you know it's a really big curve for him to kind of manage for a guy that's had a pretty rough run over the last 7 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're going to re-sign Ariza and you're going to keep Randy Whitman as your coach, you've kind of dug your own grave there. Let's transition to Atlanta. This is a very confusing team. I mean, they did what they had to do. They had to rid themselves of Joe Johnson. They had to change what they do. They're going to be more point guard driven. Hopefully Al Horford is injury free, and hopefully Josh Smith is long 2-point jumper free. And they've got shooters. But for some reason, I cannot talk myself into a team being completely driven by Jeff Teague right now. And I really think like he's the key. He's probably pretty good, and he'll probably do a good job, but it's hard to trust that. I mean, I don't trust the Hawks anyway with whatever they do. So, they've done the right things, and they've gone the right places, but I don't trust them.
You're obviously the inventor of the never trust the Hawks concept, but, you know, for me, it's one where I rely on the playoff Teague concept, where I'm like, look, if he's shown what he can do, if we can get him to train, and part of it also is I looked at the numbers last year, and a lot of it was just that Teague's usage rate was really low comparatively.
Like, oh, for sure.
He he dribbled up the court. He gave it to Joe because that's what he was supposed to do. He dribbled up the court. He gave it to the veterans. But now he's in a position to create a little bit more, because I think Smith will be like, okay, if you can get me, you know, you're old enough now. If you can get me some options, then I will trust you with the ball. I'm still going to take my, you know, 18-foot jumpers, which will kill us, but I'll also produce some in the post and in transition and driving, which Smith can be, you know, an all-star realistically at. I love the idea of everything going through Smith and Horford. I really like this team conceptually.
Oh, I don't like things going through Josh Smith. I like him being the end of a play. I do not like him being the precipice of a play. Like, I just,
well, yeah, I mean, he's also a guy that's been known as a stat stuffer in terms of being able to produce a lot of assists from time to time. So if he's able to work out of the post and do, you know, a modified version of what he did last year, you know, he's going to take those jumpers, and that's annoying, but every team's got bad habits. And if Horford's passing out, and you've got those shooters now, where you've got Korver, and you've got Morrow, and you've got, like, they really like a lot of what they saw of John Jenkins, and you've got
Jenkins. Yeah, he might be the best shooter on that team.
Yeah.
And that's a team with Kyle Korver and Anthony Morrow. I mean, that kid can just flat out shoot.
Yeah. And then you got Lewis Williams, who's not going to be efficient, but if he's in a kind of a minimized bench scoring role, I think that's okay. I'm not expecting huge things out of the Hawks, but I think it's one where they're going to at least be, I have hope that they're going to be more tolerable than they have been in the past, and the expectations are lower. Like, they're not supposed to be that good. So it's like, you know, if they win 41, 42, 43 games, you know, even 40, like, that's better than probably you'd be expected to be after losing an All-Star. So even if it is Joe Johnson, I think that, and they're going to have cap space. They've done everything right. They've got a team that's going to be probably more tolerable to watch. And you get to find out if Teague doesn't make it, if Teague doesn't do what they need him to do, if they're going to have the ability, you know, to go in a different direction, because he's going to be a restricted free agent. And if they want to sign and trade him, they can. They can do a lot of different things if they want to after this season. I like a lot of what Ferry's done there.
Yeah, no, I do too. I think they're headed in the right direction, but I'm not sure that I just don't trust them to have the right mindset instantly. And you know what I would do? I would fine Josh Smith 3 headbands every time he spends more than 3 seconds outside of 15 feet in an offensive set.
I would too.
I would fine him,
that's a great idea.
3 headbands, and just, like, you have to stay inside 15 feet.
So, I mean, let's look at this actually from, I did a post a week ago on the over-unders. Let me pull it up, because I want to get your thoughts on specifically with Atlanta. Atlanta's got, they're between 42.5 and 43.5 wins. I assume you like the under?
Actually, I put them at 43 today in the division preview. I think that's about right.
Yeah, 2 games over 500, and that's a playoff spot. I mean, they'll get creamed in the first round, but, you know, that's probably a playoff spot based off of the win totals. You know, I think that Philadelphia, I think they'll probably get that 8th seed, and they'll get destroyed by the Heat, and all will be right with the world. But, you know, I think that sounds about right to me. I think that sounds, you know, pretty good. 43 wins, 2 games over 500 sounds about right.
And, you know, one more team in the division, somebody called the Miami Heat. What do you expect? I mean, obviously they're going to be awesome this year. Do you think that, I mean, I hate the idea of talking 70 wins, but like 65, 66 wins, that seems about right to me.
I have concerns from the perspective of, if there's one team that should really be like, okay, we figured out who we are, we know what we're going to do, let's go out and destroy everybody, but doesn't do that, it's going to be Miami. Because they've been like that for the last 2 years.
That's true.
They had to figure some stuff out. And to me, you know, before, I think it was that they were still figuring stuff out and they were trying to, you know, understand who they were. But now I think it's, why are they going to bother with it? They know that they can win. They know. They know for a fact that they are a championship team. They have no doubts about it. And they know what the formula is, which is for LeBron to go into the post at point forward center, as I've started calling him, and just, you know, like you said, rain hellfire, just destroy everything, become the destroyer of worlds. But there's no point in doing that in the regular season, because it's like, what's the point of him beating up his body? Like, there's no point. Like, he can take those, you know, jab step, you know, 20-foot, 25-foot jumpers all he wants, based off of the fact that there's, you know, he doesn't need to prove anything anymore. He's done proving.
Here's the thing, though. I think not necessarily Dwayne Wade has anything to prove, because he's still one of the best in the league, and he's, you know, a two-time champion. But there were a lot of things said about Dwayne Wade in the playoffs last year regarding his inconsistency, and that might be something where he wants to drive through the regular season and rival, I mean, not be a rival of LeBron, but try to be that good, and probably in a way that doesn't take away from the team. I think he's got good enough perspective, and that's where I think that's what drives him in the regular season, is Dwayne Wade saying, I'm going to kick ass now, and LeBron can do it in the playoffs.
I would say so, except for, you know, just in all honesty, it gets harder and harder for Wade to withstand the regular season, and he knows that he's got to be healthy for the playoffs. He knows that he can't, like, they have such perspective on, there's just no reason for us to run ourselves ragged. We just, there's not a whole lot of upside to them destroying in the regular season. I think there's upside to the Lakers in terms of wanting to be like, okay, we are this good. We have a real chance of being an all-time great team. But I think they have that kind of approach. I think Miami, for the most part, has always just been like, you know what, if we win four titles, then we've accomplished our goal. Like, we've gotten to where we want to go.
And then he gets to go to L.A.
And then he gets to go to L.A., apparently. So, yeah, I think that, to me, I think I put them at 61-ish, and that to me sounds a little bit more kind of in line with where they're going to end up, which is still a lot of wins. It's still a ton. It's just that I think they'll have stretches. I worry that they're going to come to a point where they're just going to be like, they're just going to coast. And the difference, I think, maybe this year is that everyone won't be like, they're not that good. Look how much they're struggling. Ha ha. They'll just be like, yeah, they're coasting. No one cares. Like, we know that how good this team is, and we're not going to be affected by the regular season stuff.
Yeah, which maybe.
Kind of refreshing.
I think they're so talented, obviously, but I think they're more talented than they were last year. And yeah, they still don't have a lot inside, but I don't think they need a lot inside, even in the regular season. And I just think talent is going to win out most nights for them.
Before we go, I wanted to, we'll talk about this obviously a ton in 2 weeks or a week and a half when we preview the games of opening night, which is almost here, thank God. But what's your gut feeling right now on Boston-Miami on opening night?
I think Boston will probably win, just because it just seems like they're going to come out wanting to prove something. You'll have the ring ceremony hangover, and really, why does Miami care? Like, why would they care to come out and win that first game and everything? I mean, the win is accepting the rings before the game, and they're gonna know. I mean, Boston's gonna know too that a win on opening night doesn't really mean anything. But I just don't find Miami necessarily caring that much that night. I think the next time they play, you'll see a much greater intensity.
Yeah, I agree. Because the thing with it also, Boston does this where they're kind of like, oh yeah, well, look what we did to you now. And then it's like, it doesn't mean anything. But they really want to, they try and make these points in games that, like, Boston does try and make points in the regular season. They've done this back in 2008 when they beat the Pistons on their own floor and were celebrating.
Yeah.
Like, the Pistons were like, you hadn't won anything. And Boston, I don't think, necessarily thought that they won anything, but they wanted to make the point, which is, we have arrived and, you know, we are the best team in the East. And I think they're still trying to do that now. I think that on opening night it'll be, this team is a contending team. Look what we just did to the champs. I think they want to be able, like, they're big on showing what they're capable of with that kind of mindset. And I think that I think that'll be the approach. It would not shock me if we saw something kind of like Dallas last year, where they just get destroyed. It would not shock me, because we saw, I mean, Boston took them out at the end of the regular season last year. It's just like, and I actually have to applaud Miami for this. You know, the last 2 years, they've really stayed out of that fight and saved everything for the playoffs, and then given them a lot of nightmares. Even though Boston was able to take them to seven, they really, Miami gives them fits and is able to control those games to a certain degree. So I think it's which is, weird to say, because they really were close to getting eliminated, but it's gonna be fun.
Here's to a year of Miami proving they're the champions in the regular season, and bad egg salad in the Southeast Division.
Bad egg salad.
Lots of bad egg salad. Well, thank you, senior blogger Matt Moore from CBSSports.com, for joining us.
Thank you, junior blogger from CBSSports.com, Zach Harper.
And we will see you on Monday.